dedicated to all the coders who have spent countless hours fixing bugs on weekends.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We are very lucky today to have our CEO, our boss, the man in charge, the man behind the curtain, Sage Weil, CEO of Civic Media, is here for the next hour with us. He's not here in person. He's in our Madison headquarters.
Yeah, it's a bit of a drive.
It's a bit of a drive. All the way across University Avenue. Oh, you mean to Waukesha. Yes,
to Waukesha.
It is a bit of a drive to come to Waukesha for just an hour. But how are you doing today?
Pretty good. Pretty good. How about you?
Doing very well. We're having fun. We're talking about legends and lore in Eagle, Wisconsin. We're talking about American Girl dolls, also from Wisconsin. Didn't know if you knew that.
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, Middleton. They used to have a big warehouse.
That sounds about right.
We're excited. Yeah. We're excited to have you. We had guest envy because we know you were on with the Devil's Advocates.
I know. I heard you on their show, and I was like, "Well, are you going to come on my show?" And here you are.
You ask, and you shall receive.
Exactly. So there you go. There's so many different things I want to talk about, but I feel like we on our show, and for the people who listen to our show, we talk about Civic Media, we talk about the network, but I'm not sure we've done a lengthy explainer of what Civic Media is, and so who better to ask that question than you? So what is Civic Media?
Oh boy. Yeah, this is where you need the elevator pitch, and that's like not my strong suit, but I'll give it my best shot.
Well, so, we got an hour, so.
Yes, right. that'll work a bit better. So Civic Media is a new and growing network of radio stations spreading across Wisconsin, and our goal is to lean into hometown local radio to help listeners engage more with their local communities. So a lot of our programming is, news talk commentary, like we get with this show, but we want to have a strong news component that's like just pure news that just gives you the facts about what's going on in the state. And I think sort of a key thing that we're focusing on is we want to focus more on state and local issues and less on the national issues and national politics. And I think a lot of that comes out of this understanding and a lot of the research that I've been reading recently that it really says that, the more people think about Washington, the more people look at what's happening nationally and internationally. Things are framed inevitably in partisan terms, in terms of left and right and right and wrong. And there's also a lot of dysfunction and gridlock, and it just becomes very frustrating, and it's like unclear, like really how you can have an impact, and it's doesn't really help. But in a lot of cases, it's sort of the only choice that you have because you have, you're losing local papers and so on. And so like the only news you have is like Fox and CNN or whatever it might be. But in my view, the more you look at state issues, what's happening here in our state of Wisconsin and in our local communities, the more you're talking about, the businesses down the street, your friends and your neighbors, things that are tangible that are happening in your community and that we do have the power to have a real positive impact on as individuals and as citizens. And those are the relationships that are most important to sort of strengthen our community and, try to bridge the divide that we're increasingly seeing in sort of our national discourse.
And I think that's really interesting because when I came back after living in LA, San Francisco, New York, and it is so easy to talk, and I hadn't thought about Wisconsin politics because I hadn't, I didn't spend my entire adult life until moving back. I wasn't here. I moved to LA when I was 16. And the head first nosedive I've taken into Wisconsin politics and understanding how things work and how we're kind of a microcosm for how things are happening at the national level, but that they aren't necessarily going to get fixed that way. And so that's why it's been important to me since when this was still just short videos to not talk about the former guy, right? Or to not talk about Biden and that whole 2020 race was, let's talk about local races. Let's talk about what's at stake in Wisconsin.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even as one person, it's hard to do that with all, then you get even more local to know what's from Waukesha, what's happening in Wisconsin Rapids, from Wisconsin Rapids, what's happening in Amory and all the different parts of the town or parts of the state that we're trying to reach, but you kind of have to live there to know what's going on.
Yes.
And that is where everything's been drying up. And so all you have is to look up and get angry about that instead of just talk to your neighbors. And so why do you feel like, as we said, local newspapers getting consolidated into bigger and bigger companies and it's more and more expensive to...
And downsized.
Downsized. Gannett's just going through that now. So why radio?
That's a good question. And it's one that if you'd asked me a year ago, I would be like, I don't know. it wasn't something I was thinking about. I mean, this radio came to me. Well, like I say, I have two answers to that question. One is that growing up, my first job was working construction with my father. He was a carpenter and then built houses, whatever. So he worked for a contractor. So my first job was helping him build houses. I usually did the electrical. I'd pull all the wires through the attic and all the rest of it. But on the job site, all day, every day, talk radio was on, and that's just like what we heard. And the thing that I remember is Rush Limbaugh primarily. And
this was in Oregon?
This is I grew up in Southern Oregon, and my dad lived in Northern California, not the Bay Area, but actual Northern California.
That was on the northern end of the state, where San Francisco actually is.
Right, Humboldt County. Right. So, but it was like Rush Limbaugh. I think Larry King. Is it Larry King?
He was on radio before his show.
I think he was on there, and there were a couple other people, but none of them like stuck in my brain the way that Rush Limbaugh did, obviously. But he was a force to be reckoned with. But that was like, it was just the backdrop to like everything that was happening and the way that all the issues were being framed. And this was right during the time when I don't know if the spotted owl was like a big deal everywhere else in the country, but
I've literally
we were living in the middle of that whole controversy, which is really where it was the Environmental Protection Agency basically limiting cutting of old growth forests to protect the spotted owl, the species that could only live in like older forests. And it was, we're surrounded by bumper stickers that are like, you can wipe my blank with a spotted owl or whatever, or you can't, I guess, whatever it was. I don't know. It was the whole thing. But anyway, so there's that backdrop. And so I understand the influence that talk radio can have. And then fast forward to, 2021, when I met Mike Kroot and he was pitching, wanting to expand from Madison into Waukesha, for that station. And he was talking about the importance that talk radio plays today in our political world. And that is, that's sort of a clear reality of our current political situation. It's something that has, been, I think, a focal point for the right over the past several decades. And something that, there isn't really a good counterpoint on the political spectrum to what's happening on right-wing talk radio. So, for me, it's just important to have, a variety of perspectives available. And more importantly, present them in a way where you can have, a real conversation about the issues. I think that's one of the real powers of talk radio, where it's, you get to know the personalities and the people, you can call in and you can have an actual conversation, you can discuss issues and with some nuance and in a, I think, a more personal way than you get from, a sort of a dry newscast, or whatever it is that you would normally be consuming. And hopefully in a way that is more engaging than social media, where it's, Twitter, people just yelling at each other.
We
can do better than that.
Yeah.
Right?
Or and this is not to say that the paper isn't really important, but I think what I picked up of what you just said, the distinction of having a personality of someone that you like and that you start to trust, or even if you don't always agree with them, you still like them and you can call them or you can suggest guests. And it's potentially more interactive than reading the article that shows up, that's already printed and published, instead of you know, as
we know, carefully framed.
As we know all too well, live radio is live. And so if something goes wrong or the conversation goes a certain direction, you're like, I'm going to try to keep the reins on this, but here we go.
and it's
just different. And it does feel, and I think audio, even the rise of podcasts, is there is a, the audio of listening to someone's voice and the emotion that can come through it, even that isn't there, even with the best writing.
Yes.
I think does make a difference as far as
the fact
storytelling.
That it's unscripted.
Yeah.
It's more authentic. Yeah. And I think, I mean, this is something that like go through with our children sometimes is, I think it's the importance of being able to have a good faith conversation about an issue where you're not coming at from a perspective of like, I need to convince you of X because I've already decided, but to truly try to understand what the other person is saying and why they believe what they believe, so that you can have a real conversation about it and hopefully learn something from their perspective. And, you know, maybe you convince somebody, maybe you don't, but you're not going to convince somebody by just telling them they're wrong. Or calling them a name, or even just framing the conversation in terms of us and them and, or whatever it is. Like it's important to approach these conversations from a human perspective and this idea that we can all, it's not to use the word prejudge or whatever, but to say that recognizing that, you know, this is a journey for everyone and we are all learning, and that there's always an opportunity to learn something from somebody else. And just because you disagree with them coming into a conversation doesn't mean that like one of you is right or one of you is wrong, but just that they are coming at it from a different perspective, and that if you can have a real authentic conversation with them, maybe you'll learn something, and maybe that'll leave you, maybe you'll change your mind, maybe they'll change your mind, maybe neither of you will change your mind, but you'll have a better understanding and they have some like mutual respect and understand like why they believe what they believe, instead of just assuming that they're wrong and you're right.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, that's what I always say. Yeah. It's like, I'm not here to change your mind, but I'm potentially trying to plant the seed that, I never thought of it like that. All right, well, we got to take a break, but CEO of Civic Media, Sage Weil, our boss, is here for the whole hour, so stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest this whole hour is Sage Weil, who is the CEO of Civic Media, which means he is our boss. And now you were on the receiving end of Jane's creativity when picking music.
I appreciate that one.
Yes. You'd be surprised how many songs there are about software engineers.
we could
keep you on for a couple more hours.
Well, because, so we should, I mean, just to put a little bit more context in your background, and I do want to get back to the question of why this, but maybe we should skip that and first talk a little bit more of how you got here, because we said in the last segment, originally from Oregon, but you also have, it's not like you have a radio background. You were software, like programmer, engineer, thus going back to your history of doing the electrical wires for your dad's houses, right?
Right, exactly.
And so this is like, you were, like that was your background, was programming, right?
Yep. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I was like, I think it was in fourth grade. There was like a summer school option where we could come in and I think we were doing logo or something on our Apple IIe's. Anyway, I was totally hooked. I've been doing computer programming pretty much ever since in high school. We started a video game company and published an actual video game, which was kind of exciting. In college, I think there were like two, I was finishing one company that eventually sold, and then we started a new one in college. So I've been doing computer software.
You've been
everything
making
computers
things,
for a while.
Turning them into companies and then selling those companies for a while.
Which is, And it's weird because like the business part of things is usually like the least interesting part for me. And I somehow keep doing something where I like fall into this position where I have to like figure out the business part in order to keep doing the thing that I want to do. And I've been, I think, extraordinarily lucky in that, like, that keeps working out. I'm like batting 3 for 3 so far, as far as like, I mean, 4 for 4, whatever it is. But it's like, I don't know. Yeah, maybe it's just a story I tell myself. But in any case, the last 15 years or so, I've been doing open source software, which means that the software is completely free, but made a successful company selling free software, which
sounds like
a pretty small group of people who have been successful doing that. But it's a real thing, and the way that it should always work, in my opinion. But in any case, that particular project was very successful, and it's, you know, it's like probably your set-top box when you do your DVR thing on your cable company is probably being storing the data on the software that we wrote. Whatever. I think that it had just been a while. You know, I've been doing the same thing for 15 years, and I was ready for something a little bit different. And so I left my job in 2021. In 2020, I took a leave of absence for a year to work with a group doing voting outreach and just helping people navigate. And that sort of like, that was when I was like, I gotta like do something about the political situation in this country. And then it was sort of looking around for something to do next. And then this radio thing sort of happened when I met Crute. And it was like, it was one of those situations where I don't have a radio background. Like, I recognize that you don't have to keep doing the one thing that you're good at. You can learn new skills. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not so old that I can't learn new tricks. But like, this isn't really my strong suit necessarily, but nobody else is doing it. Like, I see this like clear need that somebody needs to do this. And unless and until somebody else comes along who can do it better, then like, that's what I'm going to do.
Well, and it's interesting because without putting you too much on the spot, like financially, you didn't have to do this, right? And this is not a profit seeking venture. The overhead in trying to not only just acquire radio stations, but then build out the teams to really fulfill the vision that I understand that you have is a lot of people. It's a lot of equipment. It's rent.
It's capital intensive.
Yeah. Is it just the drive of how much you believe that this is a missing piece of our media infrastructure in Wisconsin that is like, it's worth it?
Yes. But I should be clear that it's not that it's, I mean, our primary goal isn't like, you know, to get rich quick or anything like that.
Well, no, that's what I mean.
But part of the goal here is to prove that this can be profitable. It needs to be self-sustaining in order to be successful. Like, if this is something that it has to be subsidized in order to succeed, then I'm not sure I would count that as a success. So my mission is to show that this is something that is important enough to communities that people will invest in it. And that advertisers will invest by supporting it, whether it's listeners or advertisers or whatever else. Like, this feels like an important part of the social fabric that holds our communities together. And it should be profitable. So,
well, it's interesting.
My goal is to prove that.
Yeah. What I think is interesting is we hear of the if you think of the big boys, right? The iHeartMedia, the Odyssey,
yeah.
And as they almost like the newspapers are big companies that keep consolidating even the local radio stations that they have because it's capital intensive, and so they are obviously making money. But it's the distinct intention of knowing what it will cost and what is needed to actually have people on the ground in all these different stations that is almost moving backwards from what national media companies are doing.
Right, because when your primary mission is to maximize profit, then that leads you down a whole road of decisions to make where, well, if we cut this staff member and we just fill it in with automated programming, then that we can still get most of the same advertising dollars because there's no real competition. Everyone else is doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. We'll cut out the local content, but people will still listen because they don't have a choice. Like, that's sort of the calculus that happens when you have those national networks. And we are not like that, right? We have to be profitable in order to be self-sustaining, but we are a mission-driven organization with core values around, you know, democracy, strengthening communities, and being transparent about and honest about the content that we put on the air and investing in our listenership and our community. So I think that's the difference. And so far, that message has resonated with our employees, certainly. Like, people seem to be very happy to be here. I think the fact that not many other organizations are really trying to do anything like this is pretty exciting. So I'm thrilled to be here. I'm having the time of my life. It's outside my usual wheelhouse, but I think we're onto something here. So
same, Sage, same. All right, well, stick with us. We're going to talk about Sage's first impressions of Wisconsin, since he is not a native. This is As Goes Wisconsin. We'll be right back. Your eyes, they shine so bright. I think you've got a life. If you want it to go, go with the sun.
Hear me when I call, Big Boss Man.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Sage, you're now seeing. If this is what I told Jane, is like, if you can get me to laugh before we even start the segment, you have succeeded. And I think she just succeeded with you. She got you to laugh.
There you go. Yeah.
We do a lot of chair dancing too.
We do a lot of chair dancing. And I don't know if we're on beat or on, we have a lot of rhythm, but we dance. And so we are joined all hour by Civic Media CEO Sage Weil, our big boss man. And although I think of you as co-conspirator as we're trying to
there
build
we go.
This thing.
I like that. I like that. Yes.
And so, you know, I talk a lot about, I'm obviously from Wisconsin. I feel very natural being back in Wisconsin. It's the best decision of my life has been coming back to Wisconsin for obvious reasons, as far as finding my husband, having a house, now having a radio show. But you and your wife are not from here, and you moved to Wisconsin in 2016. And I would love to know some of your first impressions as far as what did you think?
I think my first impression was that it's really cold here, because the first time we visited was like February, I think. It's sort of in the thick of it, which I think is a testament to Wisconsin and Madison in particular, actually, because that was when my wife Elise came here to interview first at UW. And when she came back, she was like, I think we might need to move to Wisconsin. And that was like, you know, when it felt like it was dark all the time. Like all my memories of first time coming to Wisconsin, it was dark and cold. I don't even remember the sunlight. So, Wisconsin is amazing. I love the fact that there are four seasons. Mm-hmm. I went to college in Los Angeles, ended up spending much of the last 20-ish years there. And so, you know,
No seasons.
It's sunny in 72, or it's sunny in 95 or whatever, right? It's like, it's always sunny. And like, for some people, that's like a dream come true. But I don't know, for me, it's just like this, the sun is so bright, and then there's like concrete everywhere, and it's just like glaring. I'm just imagine being on the freeway and it just being unpleasant. So I really appreciate the fact that the seasons change and they're all distinct. And sometimes some of the seasons are shorter or longer than we would like, but you get all four of them. So I love that.
If it were sunny all the time, it would make me really cranky, because I feel like there's so much pressure that you have to be enjoying the sunshine.
Yeah. Yeah. And yes, well, that's actually one of the things I really love, is when it's like, it's those first couple days in spring where it hits like 70 degrees, or actually, you know, maybe like 50 degrees, and you see everybody outside in
when
their t-shirts,
because like
they're like so excited that it's finally
the
over.
The sun has come
like,
back!
That does not happen in other places. So, it makes you appreciate what you get. But I think the biggest thing is just that the people feel to me to be just different. I think the usual term is Midwest nice. Mm-hmm. But it was still a real surprise coming here. Like, we very quickly met almost all of our neighbors, and they would be like walking by on their dogs, and they would just stop and just start talking to you. Like, these are things that just, I was not used to happening. I think too young, or wasn't really paying attention when I was living in Oregon growing up. So I don't really know if that was a thing there, but it definitely was not a thing in Los Angeles or in the Bay Area, where I lived before. So, yeah.
So Midwest nice. Well, and Midwest that's nice. What's interesting, because at the same time, at least what the narrative is that Wisconsin is so partisan. We're so divided. And certainly that's true when you look at the voting turnout. And because I live in Milwaukee and because I'm from Madison, which are very blue areas, I also don't necessarily know if I have the pulse. I have my finger on the pulse of what it is like to live in either not only just a red area, but a very purple area. And if like you are, if there is more stories of people not talking to their neighbors now because of politics, et cetera, et cetera. But certainly it still feels as though
it feels divided.
Yeah. Yes.
But I guess.
But yet people are still nice.
Yeah. And I think my theory is that it's not as divided as it seems. I think that this feeling of division is to a large part a product of the fact that we only have two boxes that we can sort of put ourselves in. And that means that everyone's trying to like pull you into your box and push you away from the other one or whatever. Everything is framed in this like simple dichotomy. And so it sort of makes everything feel very partisan divided. But it's hard. I don't have like all the numbers at my fingertips, but I have seen several surveys or studies or whatever recently that just have like unbelievably high numbers for people who find that they don't identify with either party. I think the term I heard recently was politically homeless. And that is, I think that's a real thing. And when you think about it, it's like, it's obvious. If you only have like two choices, you're either like team red or team blue. But there are like 100 different issues that are important to you that have, you know, and make both sides valid positions on either side. Like the idea that like those are going to be perfectly aligned in those two boxes to match your beliefs is like ridiculous. It's like never going to happen, right?
Well, and so that doesn't even get into the idea of up and down the ticket of looking at the actual candidate and how smart, qualified, hardworking,
right,
let alone it's where their priorities are and what the issue, where they fall on an issue. But it's also like, are you a good person? Are you a corruptible person? Are you smart? Do I want you making decisions on my
and
behalf?
And it's very hard to like draw any bright lines around. Like, I'll give an example. It was going into, it was like in 2019 or whatever, one of my wife's good friends was saying that she doesn't want to vote for anybody in the primaries who's older than, I think it was like 55 or 60 or something like that, just because like there's so many old people in politics and they need to get out and let the next generation in, please, already. But somehow we end up with like Trump and Biden, like two old white guys. Like, come on, people. Why can't we have nice things? Why can't we have some better choices? And I think so much of that for me is just a product of the way that our current electoral system is structured. And it's so frustrating because like there are well-known ways to like fix that aren't, I mean, no structure is perfect where it solves all your problems magically, but at least address all the like most of the core issues and would be demonstrably better and give people better choices, like not just two, but you know.
Are some of those policies that you're most excited about bringing potentially? Because I think we might have some overlap.
Yes. Well, so final five voting is a big one. And that term is new. I only heard it, I think, starting in like 2020, but it's basically a combination of having ranked choice voting, which is something that I've been like passionate about for like at least a decade. And then this idea of an open primary where you vote for any candidate across any party, and then you just have the top five vote getters go into the final round, and then you rank them. But the beauty of ranked choice voting is that it is effectively, you can cast a single ballot where you rank your candidates, and you've effectively voted in every two-way contest between every possible set of candidates because you've ordered them in a list. And so you've always put somebody above somebody else. And so if the whole population does that, you can always find somebody that a majority prefers over the other. There are some like very weird corner cases if you get all mathematical about it, but to a first approximation, it's just like, you know, 1,000% better than like whoever gets the first vote. I mean, it's like that. It's like Ross Perot, and I voted for Ralph Nader way back in 2000. That was the first election I ever voted in. It was in California, so it didn't make any difference. But like the fact that like if you dare to choose something that isn't in these like two camps, then like you're ruining everything because you're spoiling the election and whatever. Like it's it's just very frustrating.
Well, and I
and it's such an easy problem to fix.
Yeah,
in theory.
And it's interesting. Yeah, yeah, because I think we haven't had her on the show yet, but we have had Sarah at, I think it's Eskridge, who is the executive director at Democracy Found, which is Catherine Gale, who has written a book, and she wrote. Well, I first found Catherine Gale in a Harvard Business Review article that she wrote, as far as talking about our system as it is a duopoly, and that their best interest as both the Republican and the Democratic Party is to have them be the only parties. And because all they have to do then is make sure that you hate the other party enough that you feel like you have to vote for this party even though you don't like them because look how bad the other guys are. And
all the incentives are wrong.
I feel like we saw that play out in real time of how the system as it is set up, of how much they do not want another party because it ruins that strategy in the, I forgot even what is Andrew Yang's new thing that he's, the Forward Party.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not saying that, you know, they kind of came out without a real policy platform, and I think there's some critiques that are real, but the critique of if you vote for a third party, you're going to ruin our chances of winning. Yeah. Like, well, is that the best?
Yeah, yeah.
That just feels like you just don't want to lose market share because instead of having better ideas and continuing to have attract more people to your ideas versus just not voting for the other guy.
Yes. And I think if you look at the last, whatever, not just recent history, but like everything leading up except the recent time, like it's definitely the case that it was always in the party writ large, like in their interest to like not allow third parties, right? Because they have this, they can claim a whole half of the electorate instead of, you know, some, you know, less well-defined coalition or whatever. I think that is beginning to change. And I guess the thing that gives me hope is that when I talk to individual politicians, they are like, they're on board, right? Like they believe in, and especially I think everything that's happened over the past like 6 years or whatever has like sort of raised the awareness in everyone's mind that it's really important that we like to tend to the garden structures of democracy itself in order to uphold the system and not just like bend the rules as much as we can for our own advantage. I think the individuals support those types of reforms because I think a lot of Democrats and actually these days a lot of Republicans are members of that party, but they don't like, they don't subscribe to the whole party platform and they're concerned about the direction that the party is taking and would like to, if there were another way that they could advocate for the things that they care about and get some support, then they would do that. But for somebody who's, you know, a little bit right of center or a little bit left of center, like you only have one choice.
Yeah. Or you don't, or you just don't vote at all, which a lot of people just choose to do that.
Right. And as a politician, I mean, like.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Right. If you're, you know, a Mitt Romney and you don't like the direction that the Republican Party is going these days, but you don't really have a choice, like you're not going to become a Democrat because you don't subscribe to most of the policy provisions, but you still believe that like there should be, you believe in the rule of law and like upholding democratic norms and so forth, but like you're kind of stuck. It'd be nice to have. I think part of the problem right now is that you have one political party that has sort of like made their bet on fascism and tearing down democratic institutions. And that wouldn't be such a problem if there were like five parties and only one was fascist and the other four were still pro-democracy. And you could like still pick a conservative platform that like believed that people's votes mattered. But because there are only two, then like everything is good and bad, left and right, progressive or conservative. Like everything is always framed in these two boxes. And that's real problematic.
Well, and I'm going to set up the question, and then we'll go to a break. But because we don't have those laws yet, because we do have a two-party system, and because of the mission, at least on my show, and I think the larger mission of civic media, of trying to have more open dialogue that is factual, that is gives room for multiple different types of voices, and yet I'm certainly left of center, if not very left of center, depending on who you ask and what topic it is. And I would say most of the talk show hosts right now are pretty left. And so how do we, this is a question for you to answer when we come back. Mm-hmm. How do we approach shows and content that feels like everyone's welcome and yet in such a partisan environment where it is sometimes black and white. So having someone listen and then be like, well, this isn't for me, and they immediately turn it off. And so I think about this all the time. So I'd love to hear your answer. So our guest this hour, he's with us for 10 more minutes when we come back for the break, is Sage Weil, who is the CEO of Civic Media. Stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
You just told us all. Give me a boss man, the one that's gonna treat me right. Work hard in the evening, rest easy at night. Big boss man, big boss man, big boss man. Can't you hear me when I call? I said you ain't so big, you just tall, that's all. I'm gonna type some code. Only got 20 hours this semester. Calculating. See me innovating.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Christian Fry. We have 10 minutes left with our CEO of Civic Media, Sage Weil. And it sounds like we have a text on the text line.
We do. Texter from the 514. I'm going to have to look up where that is. Does Wisconsin allow voters to register without claiming a party? Asking as a true independent.
I believe it's yes. In fact, I think it doesn't even.
Yeah, you can't. Register as a party. There's not a box for it. And so it gets a little confusing during the primary season because you can't fill out. You'll get a ballot that has all of the elections on there, but you can only vote in one party's primary. And so during absentee voting, it's like, don't fill out both sides. Just fill out the one side that you want to vote for. You can't like pick and choose. And so, but I prefer that because I think that there are people who go back and forth. And so to register as one party and then decide, I don't want to vote for those people. But no.
Yeah.
All right. So I asked you before we took the break about how to approach content in a way that is authentic and authentic to our opinions while still being appealing for people who don't necessarily agree with, I'll say for me, right? They don't necessarily agree with me, but approaching this in a way that it's not scorched earth. And I guess in a simple form, my show, but also as you're deciding what shows do we want to put on all these different radio stations. And so how do you think about that?
I think there are a couple different ways to approach it. Things that we're thinking about. I think the first is it's really about the tone that the hosts take on the air. I think the most problematic thing is when everything is it's us them framing of issues, they're doing this, they're doing that, or whatever. I think that is very dangerous because you don't know when you're saying they, maybe you're thinking like a set of politicians over there, but if you're, I think the way people hear it is like, oh, they're talking about my political party that I identify with. Right. I think it's the danger of talking about Trump, is that a lot of people voted for Trump. And so if you're going on about, Trump Republicans or blah, 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 whatever, like there are a lot of people who voted for Trump that like think you're talking about them and like saying they're terrible people. And that's, I think not a constructive line of conversation. I think tone and choice of language is important, certainly. But I think more important than that is just like the intention that you come to it with, like trying to understand the nuance of the issues and have a deeper conversation and to get additional voices on and like have a conversation that where you're actually trying to learn something. I think that's really important. Separate from that, I think a whole nother thing is that I think we need more diverse voices on the air. Now we're really trying to find more pro-democracy conservatives to bring on the network. We have a couple changes coming up in a couple weeks here. We're rearranging some of our shows, adding in some new hosts, and we're actively looking for others. So, like, if you believe in the mission that we're talking about here of revitalizing our local communities and focusing on having like a real nuanced discussion, then like, we want to hear from you. We would love to get those voices on the air. Not just hosts, also callers, guests. Like this, the whole point here is to have a real conversation and really sort of get past the rhetoric, I guess. And
get past the echo chamber.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Where should we send people who are interested in either learning more or potentially applying or saying, I want to have a radio show. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, maybe I'll regret. No, there's jobs@civicmedia.us. You can just email us. Come to our website. There's a contact form, all that stuff. Any of the ways you can leave us a voicemail, whatever it is. Yeah.
All right. So with the couple minutes that we have left, any deep cuts on election stuff as we are, depending on who you ask, we're either 17 or 18 days away. If you ask Luke, we're 18. If you ask me, it's 17.
Depends on if you count. Yeah. Yeah. Get out there and vote.
I think that's the most
important thing. Like, participate. Like, I think what's so frustrating is that so many people are disillusioned with politics and the system, and they're like, democracy is broken, blah blah blah. And it's, I'm not saying that you're wrong, but I'm saying that it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you believe that and you let that convince yourself. If you let that convince yourself not to vote, then it'll become true. The way to save democracy is to participate. And I really feel like there's a growing understanding of what we need to fix structurally to remove some of these perverse incentives that are driving the polarization and the dysfunction in our system. If we can get past this next couple of elections and like implement some of these reforms, you know, in like at the county level, if we could do, any county could go and do Final Five and they could do multi-member districts or whatever in their like local districts or in their municipality, and sort of like get people accustomed to the idea that you can change things for the better and make things more functional and like establish a template before you like try to roll it out statewide or nationwide or whatever it is. Right. So
that's an interesting concept of just starting it. I didn't realize you could start it locally, either on the municipal or county level. And then
I'm sure that there are challenges. Like if we actually wanted to do this because the software and the voting machines needs to be changed in order to allow some of these things to happen. But I think that addressing this at the county level is perfect because I'll give an example. Here in Dane County, there are like 37 seats on the county board. In one county, that means that each district is like a couple of, there's like tiny weird little districts and a lot of these districts, like there's only one person running. And so they're not even like the election is, there's not even a competitor or whatever. It's like that having single member districts is like just kind of ridiculous. But if we move to a system of multi-member districts with proportional ranked choice voting, which is sort of the other reform after Final Five that I'm really excited about, then it means that you would have a larger district and you would have like five seats that represent collectively that larger district. And it means that if you have like a 60-40 split in the electorate, red and blue, assuming that people actually fall into these two camps, although really they don't. But let's say for the sake of argument that you have 40% Republicans and 60% Democrats, then you would end up electing, you know, like three Democratic representatives and two Republican representatives. And those people who are in the minority in that district would still have representatives that are theirs that are speaking to their interests. Whereas right now, like, we keep talking about having fair maps, which gives us like roughly the same number of like red and blue seats, but that sort of ignores the fact that most of the seats aren't competitive and you have these huge minorities that just don't have representation. They don't have a voice in government. And as a result, then the politicians that represent them aren't responsive to their constituents, right? If you're in a safe red district or a safe blue district, like it doesn't really matter what your voters think. You can do whatever you want.
And you just have to be a good person.
Even good people can be corrupted, right? And so you really have to structure things so that, and that ignores the fact that obviously there are also people who aren't, you know, really trying to be that good. We can give them all the benefit of the doubt. I think we always have to give people the benefit of the doubt.
I agree.
To some degree. Yeah.
Optimism.
Yeah.
Hope. All of those things. All right, Mr. Sage Weill, thank you so much for spending an hour with us. We'll have to do it again.
That's fine.
There's certainly more nerdy election voting stuff that I think we could agree and pontificate on. So thank you so much, and I love working with you.
Thank you. I love working with you. It's been fun.
All right. Well, stick with us. When we come back, Matt Miller will be here to talk about the spooky season and the spooky movies. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Swim through the Hoover Dam.
Wait, what?
Apollo 11.
Space.
Engineer.